Low libido, or the desire to want to engage in intimacy, is way more common than you think. One of the root causes to low libido is painful sex. Today, we dive deep into painful sex. What causes it? What happens to the body when pain rather than pleasure is someone's experience? And what to do about it? This topic is near and dear to my own heart since I have navigated painful sex for years and years. I have learned so much along my own journey that I can't wait to share with you so that you don't have to experience the same struggles I did. I can't wait for you to glean all of this knowledge and wisdom. Let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Okay, so this week on the podcast, we're going to kind of circle back to a topic that we've talked about beforehand, but then now take it a step deeper into a different direction, which is the idea of libido, low libido, and then how this relates to painful sex and how one of the root causes for low libido is painful sex for some people. And it's just something that nobody really talks about. I think it kind of feels taboo or it feels embarrassing. It feels, you know, it's like there's something wrong with me. This shouldn't be happening. This isn't happening for anyone else. Everyone seems to love sex. They want sex, et cetera, et cetera. And this is a topic that you, Dr. Leah, are very passionate about. And, you know, you have always said for a very long time that you wanted to write a book about this. And I think that that would be amazing because you have so much to say about it and such a really cool, interesting perspective and way of looking at it. So we're going to kind of outline that for you all today. So why don't you just kind of walk us through some of the reasons that pain can be happening, what to do for the pain, you know, what's the naturopathic doctor lens of looking at this, this issue and then how to resolve it?
Yeah. Thanks for that lovely introduction, Morgan, Dr. Morgan. Libido is so, I don't love that I know so much about low libido because I wish that my experience was different than it is and that it has been. But because of my experience with trauma and pain and low libido, I do feel like I have spent years and years and years and hundreds of hours trying to figure it out because it's something that was very important to me. And people who maybe don't have those obstacles would never take the time or understand these, you know, nuances and things. And so, you know, as we often talk about the hero's journey, a lot of our own struggles, just like you with mastitis and other postpartum things, we just have a lot to share. And I know that not everybody listening to this might be experiencing painful sex, but libido, low libido is super common, way more than you would think. So I've always shared that I ask on my intake form with patients, and I used to see hundreds and hundreds of patients, if they're satisfied with their sex life. And I am not kidding. 98% of my patients said no. And that's really shocking and alarming, but no one talks about it. No one brings it up with their friends. A lot of women don't even bring it up with their partners. They just kind of deal with it. And there's a lot to unpack with libido. And we have an episode, episode 15, where I kind of talk high level about libido. And I did mention in that episode that I was going to have an ebook coming out, and I don't even remember what happened to that ebook that has not come out yet, but I do want to get this information out so you can dive through all of it. But one component of libido is painful sex, and I'm going to dive into that. But painful sex can happen for a couple different reasons. And when we talk about painful sex, it can be uncomfortable sex. It doesn't necessarily have to be pain, but just there's something not right. Sex should be pleasurable. It shouldn't have pain. It shouldn't have discomfort. And so anyone who's experiencing any of those feelings, you know, can fall into this category. So just to highlight some of the reasons
Well, and real quick, so it can also be kind of both, right? Like it can be painful and also pleasurable at the same time.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, that's – thank you. Okay, so sex is so complicated and libido is so complicated. So let me just back up for
– especially female sex.
So, oh my gosh, it's crazy. And this is why a lot of people don't know that much about it. One, because sex itself has only just recently been studied from like the current modern scientific lens. We know a lot more about sex and pleasure from ancient cultures. But because of like religious influences and all sorts of stuff, it's just been very taboo in our culture. It's not something easily studied. It's not something a lot of people want to participate in. So there's not as much understanding as there is about like the gut microbiome or hormones or whatever. But with libido, let's just highlight first and foremost. Libido is the desire to want to have sex. It is the I want to engage in intimacy. I want to have sex. It's different than arousal. So I mentioned this in our previous podcast, episode number 15. Arousal is the ability for the body to like respond to sexual stimuli. So for a man, that's an erection, very easy and obvious. But for a female, it's not as obvious. It could be something like getting wet. It could be like your labia gets more plump. You maybe have more sensitivity in your nipples or your skin or whatever. And so it's this physiological response. That's arousal, which is different than libido. And some people can have an issue with the desire. You know, they don't want to engage in sex. Some people can have an issue with arousal. They want to engage in sex. They're like, let's go have sex, but their body's not responding. And some people can have issues with both. So to talk about this with pain and libido and arousal and all of that, it's important to know the difference. And the other key piece, we should probably just talk about the science before we talk about reasons. The other key piece with sexuality is that it is so complicated. It is an interplay between your hormones, your nervous system on so many levels. There's your actual nervous system of like your parasympathetic and your sympathetic. Parasympathetic is your rest, digest, and have sex part of your nervous system. And the sympathetic is the I'm running from a tiger, I'm super stressed, this is how I stay in survival mode. In order for sex, libido, and arousal all to occur, there needs to be a strong parasympathetic nervous system. But on top of that, there's also touch sensation parts of your nervous system. So if you touch your arm with your finger, there's an impulse that is sent from that touch. It's actually really amazing. I want everyone to just like sit really quick and be like, I'm going to touch my arm with my finger. And the fact that you can feel that is incredible because there are proprioceptors in your skin that send an electrical signal, an electrical, okay, for any of you who are like, energy's woo-woo, it is an electrical signal through your nervous system from your arm all the way up to your brain that says you're being touched. And then it interprets that touch as pleasure or pain. So, you know, you can touch your arm with the tip of your fingertip and you can be like, oh, I feel that. You might like tickle your arm and it's like, ooh, that tickles, or like that is pleasurable. Or you could like squeeze your arm or poke it with something and it's like, ooh, that's painful. And all of that is happening in the same part of the region of your arm, depending on what is happening there, right? Are you poking it? Are you tickling it? Are you lightly touching it? Your brain is interpreting all of that. And that is how we move through the world, right? That's how we understand that bumping our knee into a wall hurts and we don't do that again. You know, it's how we understand that like cuddling with a person or like being touched is like a good thing and maybe we want more of that. What can happen with some people is that communication gets all messed up. And what should be pleasurable is painful. And then what makes it even more complicated, to circle back to what you said, is that pain and pleasure neural pathways are actually very closely related and they're very close together. So sometimes things that can be interpreted as pain can also very easily shift into pleasure. And vice versa, you could be in like a really good pleasurable like state and then it turns to pain because they're very similar. So it's so fascinating. I mean, we could just have a whole podcast about the dysfunction that happens in our nervous system with pain and pleasure. It's also why some people have different sexual fetishes or, you know, have different things where to some people that might be painful, but to somebody else it might be pleasurable. And it, you can go down this just like really complicated, you know, world. You know, some people like getting their hair pulled. And it's like, if you're not into that, you'd be like, what in the world? That hurts so bad. Some people are like, oh, that is interpreted as pleasure in my experience. So, you know, sex is just very complex, and it plays into our past experiences. It plays into our own bodies, like reaction to things. And so that's important to note, because when there's an issue with painful sex, sometimes there's like an actual blockage. It would be like, you know, trying to do something, but there's something physically there. And sometimes it's like a phantom experience where there doesn't appear to be anything wrong. There's nothing physically there, but your body's nervous system is interpreting it incorrectly. And that is complicated, you know? So it's
and
just
it's
something-
not even like, you know, oh, go ahead. It's not even like, you know, that there's the lack of, you know, some of these obvious reasons, which I know we'll get into, which is like, if there's a lack of dry or wetness or something, if it's very dry, or if we're hitting the cervix because it's down and low and it's kind of painful, it can happen even in just like very gentle, benign, you know, not things that would necessarily be interpreted as, well, duh, that, of course, that's going to be painful. And this can be so frustrating for people. And it also can make men feel scared to then want to engage in sex because they feel like they're hurting you, or females, whoever you're with. But it's like difficult then as the partner to want to do this with somebody that you're hurting them, you know? Yeah. And even if they're like, they want to be involved and you're trying out some different things, if it's, you don't want to ever be inflicting pain on somebody that you love. And so there is all of then the higher level, you know, frontal lobe, human cognitive experience layers onto this as well. And then we get like embarrassed. We feel shame. We feel like we're doing something wrong. Or maybe the partner feels that way because they're like, I can't make this good for you. And what's wrong with me because of that? And da 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 da. And then now there's all this like social, like interpersonal relationship stuff on top of it. Like,
yeah.
I feel like this is probably actually one of the very most layered topics and issues of the human experience in general, because it is,
oh, yeah,
our body, it is our nervous system, as you said, and then it also is our head and our heart and our kind of like soul experience. It goes back to the trauma stuff. It almost interplays in every single area of our life.
Yep. It is so complicated, which is why it deserves a book. And one day I will do that, because there are a few books out there on libido, and I've read almost all of them, and they all fall short, in my opinion, in some capacity, because they're missing a key component that, unless you've maybe been through certain experiences, you just wouldn't even pay attention to, because it gets so complicated. So when we talk about painful sex and libido, we need to understand this nervous system thing. The other thing we need to understand is how our brain remembers stuff. So just like I said about us touching our arm and our body interpreting what that means, we also build what are called neural pathways in our brain. And for example, if you are eating chocolate cake and you love the chocolate cake, it's so good, it has lots of sugar, and it's stimulating dopamine and serotonin and all of these feel-good neurotransmitters, you're going to start building neural pathways that chocolate cake equals yummy, chocolate cake equals good, and you're going to start wanting to eat chocolate cake. And this can happen from a young age, you know? I mean, we can get into like the whole addictive component of sugar, but just for the analogy, bear with me, of just thinking about it as just chocolate cake tastes good, that you have a positive experience. And so you build a neural pathway, and that pathway, every time you have that good cake, gets stronger and stronger and stronger. Versus if, let's say you're a kid and the only cake you've ever eaten is like really crappy cake, like a gluten-free, dry, really not fun tasting cake, you know, you're going to build the neural pathway that cake is kind of gross. It's not that good. And most likely you're not really going to crave it. You know, you're not going to be the kid at the birthday party who's like first in line to get the cake, because your only experience or the networks that you've strengthened is that cake is actually not very good. And this is another key part of libido and pain in particular, is that whatever our experiences are, we strengthen that neural pathway in our brain that then drives our future behavior. So I use this analogy all of the time in regards to libido. We can take that same information. Let's say we're not having good sex. Let's say it's not painful, but maybe our partner was raised on porn, and so he has no idea how to actually pleasure us well. And we just don't have a good experience with our partner that's good for us. You're not going to desire or crave something that's not good, right? Like, no one wants crappy cake. No one wants crappy sex. No one wants crappy intimacy. If it's not good for you, if you're not getting these reward pathways that are lighting up and creating these neural pathways, you're not going to crave it more, which is what libido is, right? This desire, this craving. Now, that's one experience of like the crappy cake model. There can be people, and this has been, you know, partly my experience, where the cake is good and you still don't crave it. So what is that? With pain, it's like you have this really great cake. It's so yummy. Yet every time you eat it, you get punched in the stomach. And someone gives it to you again and you've tasted it. You're like, oh my God, this is so good. But then you get punched in the stomach. Eventually, you're going to be like, okay, I mean, I get that that's good. And I get that that cake is really good. But I don't know if I like crave getting punched in the stomach every time I eat it. You know, like that's not... Now I'm starting to build this neural pathway that like, yes, that's good and that's pleasurable, but I get a lot of pain that comes with that. And eventually you get to the point where you're like, I actually don't want that. I don't want to be punched in the stomach all the time. And that's kind of the analogy with painful sex. Even if it feels good in some capacity, even if you orgasm, even if there's some part of pleasure, if there's a pain component, your body's going to do things to kind of prevent you from experiencing that pain, because pain is a huge motivator for our brain to like not do it, like not do that thing. I don't want to run my knee into the wall. I don't want to be punched in the stomach. Our bodies are very smart. They're like, let's keep you safe. And so then that gets really complicated if you're experiencing painful sex, because you probably have a partner who wants to engage in sex. You probably want to engage in sex, but then it's painful and that sucks. So you can kind of see the complexity of this whole thing, I'm sure. It's starting to become clear. So what are some of the root causes that can lead to painful sex? For some people, it's physical stuff, like you have a fibroid or a polyp or like a vaginal polyp, or you have endometriosis. Endometriosis is a condition where you have the endometrial tissue, which is the lining of your uterus, is growing outside of your uterus in other places. So it can cause scar tissue and adhesions, and it can be painful to have sex because it's like pulling, and there's all of this anatomical stuff going on in your reproductive organs, and that can cause a lot of pain. So for females who've never had trauma, they've never had sexual trauma, but they're having pain with sex, that's like the first place I'm thinking of is let's rule out the anatomical stuff. Let's rule out endometriosis. Unfortunately, a lot of women will see many, many doctors without getting a diagnosis of endometriosis, but painful sex is definitely always needs to be, or endometriosis always needs to be at the top of that list if you're experiencing that. Sometimes it can be from hormonal issues. High hormones, endometriosis can have high hormones, but it can also be from low hormones. Sometimes women have low testosterone or low estrogen, and this can make it hard to get aroused. It can, if your body's not fully aroused, sex can be painful. Even for somebody who sex isn't normally painful, let's say they've had sex for a while, but then all of a sudden they have like a weird experience and they're like, ooh, that was weird. You know, checking in to be like, were you in your head? Were you like not present? Were you not actually fully aroused in your body? Because then sex can be painful. And just one painful experience of sex can start to make someone like, whoa, like, you know, it can really rock their world, because it would just be like going to a birthday party and getting punched in the stomach. Like, that's intense. Like, just one time would be really intense. You'd kind of question going to the birthday party and eating the cake again, right? So making sure that you're fully aroused is another, I guess that can be its own thing, being fully aroused, but sometimes people can't get there because of hormonal issues. Sometimes it's from an infection. So if you have an imbalanced vaginal microbiome, maybe you have yeast or you have BV, bacterial vaginosis, which is like an imbalance of the good and bad bacteria in your vagina, it can cause irritation or it can cause pain or discomfort. Sometimes people have what's called pelvic inflammatory disease, where the reproductive organs and like the cervix and that whole area is infected or inflamed. That can cause a lot of pain, especially like deep pain, you know, if you're like having deep penetration around the cervix. So an infection can definitely be a cause of painful intercourse, especially if you've had normal sex and then it's not anymore. You know, that's where you're like, what's going on? And then the other thing is negative associations or programming. So people who were raised maybe in a purity culture or strict religious household or had either early childhood or early adult experiences that sex was shameful or dirty or wrong or bad, the body, even without having any of like the physical experience of sex for years, you can build that neural pathway and programming that says this is bad. And as soon as it actually happens, your body's like, oh, I've been learning about this for years and years. This is really bad. We should reject this. And it turns it into pain. You know, it would be like someone being told for years that cake is going to hurt you. It's nasty, this horrible thing that's going to hurt you. And you go to a birthday party and you're like, okay, I'm going to try this cake. And then you're just like, you have this almost visceral reaction because you've had so much programming that this thing is bad. And then the last one, which was my experience, oh, I've kind of had a lot of these, is trauma. And trauma can happen in lots of different ways. You can have, you know, trauma in your female reproductive organs from gynecological exams. Some women who go to get a pap for the first time, maybe they're not even sexually active yet, but they have a doctor who's not very good at bedside manner, or they insert the speculum and it's uncomfortable, or there's something around that vaginal exam where they feel violated or something. It cannot even have to do with sex, but it just has to do with your vagina and your reproductive organs. There can be trauma from abuse, like sexual abuse as a child, as an adult. It can even be having sex even if you wanted it. Like, let's say you're in college and you like this guy, you meet him at a party or whatever, and in the moment you're like, yeah, I want to have sex, but then you get into the sexual experience and it's like not going the way you maybe imagined, or it's maybe rougher than you thought, or maybe you tell them to stop and they don't, or whatever. It doesn't always have to be like rape, you know, or a non-consenting sexual experience. That's obvious. That's like the most extreme form of sexual trauma, right? Where it's not your choice, you don't want it, and the body can go into this like hyper crazy shutdown mode. But there can be other versions of trauma that can happen sexually that can lead to this. Because some people will have pain with sex and they're like, I don't have endometriosis. I don't have an infection. I've never been raped. I don't understand. But when you actually start talking to them about their history and their programming or whatever, you know, they could have had a less than positive experience. And that can be enough to like tip the scale. So I just want to highlight that for people, because it's not like everybody who has painful sex has had some crazy, like terrible trauma. The other thing is if it has come from some sort of a trauma, the more trauma, the more reinforcing those neural pathways. So like I mentioned, it can be one time. It could be a one-time experience where you're not aroused enough, or a one-time experience with a gynecologist, or a one-time experience with a partner. And that can be enough. But like, let's say you have a habitual experience where maybe you're with a partner who doesn't really know how to get you aroused, or you don't know how to become aroused, and you just keep having sex because you don't know any different. And it's like painful over and over and over again. Like the more experience of pain you have, the more that neural pathway is going to get stronger and stronger and stronger, if that makes sense.
Thank you for outlining all of those reasons. And I just had a couple of little tidbits that I wanted to add on there from the perspective of like one of the, when you're talking about low hormones and lack of arousal. So arousal being that physiological response, this is the really common experience of women who are postpartum and are especially in the breastfeeding situation. And it can kind of make you feel like, again, this almost, it weaves in multiple things because it's like, is this the programming of hearing your whole life that once you have kids, you're never going to have sex again, or that your relationship with your partner's gone or whatever. And it's like, well, time out, you're postpartum. And if you're breastfeeding, you're in this hormonal physiological state that is keeping you kind of, for the purpose of the baby that you have that's alive in your arms right now, keeping you not wanting to have sex. I mean, who knows if that was the exact intention, but that is the experience of what happens. You have low testosterone, low estrogen, you're in a high prolactin breastfeeding state, and usually ovulation is suppressed. Ovulation is when women are going to have their highest peak in libido anyways. We are a lot like animals, since humans are animals in that kind of a way. I think that that is super helpful for men. I think also to just understand and realize about women is that we do not have the every single day same exact hormonal picture like they do. They wake up and they have just this 24-hour cycle of the way that their testosterone peaks. We as women, as we know, but I'm just going to say it, we have a more of like a 28-day cycle, monthly cycle with our hormones. And so we have this peak in our libido in the middle of the month. But when you are not ovulating because you are breastfeeding, even if you are ovulating and having a normal cycle while you're breastfeeding, you're still going to be in this sort of deficited state where whether it's the desire and the actual like heady part of the libido of the want to have sex, or if it's the arousal or both that are lessened, that I just feel like is such a common experience that nobody really talks about. And usually for a lot of people, once you wean and you can get back into it, if all the other factors are taken care of, which is like, you know, that you're sleeping and you're, you know, parenting is exhausting. It can be really hard, especially when you have little kids and we're up all night and da da da. That's obviously going to break your libido as well. So just not knowing and understanding that, so you're not putting yourself in such a like judgy state with your postpartum experience of not necessarily wanting to have sex and thinking that this is the way it's going to be forever. Like, we have to have grace on ourselves and understand what's happening, and that this is just a blip in time of our, hopefully, you know, our relationship with our partner is going to be long lasting. And so we can't shame ourselves for the way that our bodies are responding or not, and our mind is responding or not during that state. Another thing that I wanted to say, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm glad you brought that up because you might touch on this, but birth can also be that first moment where someone has some sort of an experience, call it trauma, call it shift and whatever, where then post birth, they're having pain for the first time with sex. And so that can be another thing that can trigger it, whether it was like the trauma of, you know, all the things that go around with birth, whether it was like the baby actually coming out of the vaginal canal. It doesn't mean that every vaginal birth is going to lead to that, but it's a clue that there's some imbalance, right? Right. But for some people, I know of one in particular off the top of my head who could never have had painful sex for years and years and years until after birth. And then that is when it started. But there are so many things that we can do to help that. But yeah, I just wanted to highlight that. Great, great call.
Well, and then the reverse can also happen, whereas like people had painful sex, then they give birth and that painful sex goes away, which is really interesting and leads to this like physiological kind of or anatomical cause. And also, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because postpartum issues with the pelvic floor, I think, are something that people just normalize and they deal with, and it does not have to be your new normal. Pelvic floor physical therapists, which we can link the pelvic floor PT episode that we had as well, where we talk a lot about these types of things because people just don't quite realize how common it is and also that there's a solution in a lot of ways. I also think it's important to distinguish that there's a couple of different types of pelvic floor PTs. And in my opinion, it is best to have somebody who's going to be doing some internal work because after birth, whether it was vaginal or C-section, your pelvic floor, your entire, like, you know, hip, all your organs, all of the ways that your reproductive organs sit in your pelvis can be different. There can be adhesions, there can be scar tissue, there can be just tightenings in different spots. And all it may be that needs to happen is a couple of internal sessions to release knots or adhesions, just like the way you can have in your shoulders or your back, you go get a massage. Sometimes we need to have that same kind of thing internally in our vaginal canal. And then now, boom, we don't have painful sex. It can be like an amazing solution. It can seem like a laughably simple solution to something that we was like agonizing and we maybe just lived with it for way too long. We don't need to. So yeah, thank you for bringing that up. And then I wanted to say too, about like purity culture and the negative association, the programming. One thing that is I'm really passionate about, and we will have an episode about this at some point, is when we are talking about sex to our children. Yeah. I learned this from a podcast. It wouldn't have been something that I would have thought about, and it would have felt really cringy and awkward. And I haven't gotten there yet with my daughters. I've had the conversation with my son, but it didn't really, we didn't go there in this particular layer. Like having conversations with our kids about sex is multiple drops in a bucket. It's not just a one-time thing. We leave our kids up for the vulnerability of sexual abuse and, you know, misunderstandings and being exposed to things that will shape their view of sex for the rest of their lives. Like if they learn about sex through porn from somebody's phone because they're eight and they grab a phone and then they see some sort of porn on accident, that can change the whole trajectory of this, right? So we want to be getting ahead of it. I know that conversation can feel like it's happening really young, but we are the parents. We are the leaders of the family. We are the ones that are going to be the safe place for them to come back and talk to about this. And one of the things that I learned through this like research on my own behalf is that with conversations specifically with little girls, boys too, but when you are talking with your daughters about having sex and what sex is like and just the whole process of the whole thing, one of the things to emphasize continually for years is that it should feel good and that this mm-hmm. is something that sometimes little girls grow up and they have no idea that it should feel good. And you'd think to yourself, how would somebody not know that? Like, surely they would pick up on that through all of the like social references and movies and different things. Seems like people are enjoying themselves, whatever. But it literally needs to be said to the little girls. Listen, this is kind of more complicated than it's going to be for your male partner or your female, you know, whatever, who are they with. But I mean, typically it's going to be male, female, right? So it's like, this is going to be more complicated for you than it is for them in some regards. And you need to be able to communicate to yourself or to them that like, this is not going the way that it is, it should be, or, you know, it should always have a level of pleasure with it. It's an important part of a loving relationship. And it is obviously also how we reproduce as a human species. But that I just wanted to say, I know that kind of might feel really weird and awkward and cringy. And even to me, it still does feel that way because it's like, how am I going to have that conversation? Like that feels so weird and awkward, but it's true. And we want to be able to empower our girls that they don't have to like just deal with this for years and years until they happen to stumble upon some kind of a resource or a conversation with a friend where it's like the first time that they've really heard this idea that like, no, it shouldn't feel bad at all. You should have no bad feelings with this. It should be good. And if it's not, then there's something going on there and we can deal with that. So
yeah, I just wanted to say a couple of those things. We should definitely do a whole episode on that because I would also like to know what to do to broach that topic with my own children. Yeah. And no one is guided on how to do that in our culture. And I just like think back to how different my life would have been too if I had known just any of the things that I know now. And I think as parents, sometimes they think if I just don't bring it up, if I ignore it, it won't happen. If I don't talk to my kid about sex, they'll never have sex. Or if I just scare them into having sex, like what was happening to me my whole life, like don't ever have sex, you know, you'll be super bad. It's like such a sin, whatever. But even the whole conversation of like, don't have sex until marriage. Okay. What happens if you do, if you are able to save yourself, if you haven't had some sort of trauma before then, a lot of people will have sex for the first time with their partner and it's not good. And because they've been raised their whole life thinking sex is bad. And so the minute you have a ring on your finger, all of a sudden that neural programming just disappears. It doesn't. So yeah, I think there's a lot that we can do as parents in lots of different capacities. So thank you for bringing that up. We should definitely have a whole episode on that. Let's take a moment to hear a word from our sponsors. Today, we're talking all about low libido. And one of the root causes for low libido is painful sex. But another root cause of low libido is stress. Stress is probably one of the most common causes of low libido in women and men, which is why I love Needed's stress support supplement. We helped formulate this supplement to support women and men, if they want that, with stress. When we want to engage in intimacy with our partner, if we are stressed, we are put into the sympathetic nervous system. And we are not in the parasympathetic nervous system, which is what we need. When we have chronic stress, we also really take a toll on our adrenal glands. The adaptogens and the herbs in Needed Stress Support are really helpful for healing our adrenals and helping to bring balance back to our nervous system. This is one of my favorite formulas. It's safe for before pregnancy and after pregnancy. Anytime you're not pregnant, this is a great option and can be a really great tool to help somebody who is wanting to boost their libido and reduce their stress. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first order. Again, that is thisisneeded.com. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% and check out the stress support. Okay, now back to the show. So you had mentioned some of the things to do to support the pain, and I'm just going to kind of go through what to do if you're experiencing pain. First and foremost, it's probably ideal to go to a gynecologist and rule out any of the obvious stuff, you know, anatomical things, infections. If you can find someone to do a really good workup for endometriosis, that kind of work to make sure that there's nothing that's super obvious, you know, making sure that you're having vaginal dryness, potentially doing a hormone panel and checking to see if your hormones are normal. I have a free optimal lab ranges guide you can get at my website, womanhoodwellness.com/lab, where you can kind of see what hormone levels should be. And if they're not normal, you know, that's a clue to investigate into that. But then you also mentioned, Dr. Morgan, pelvic PT. So pelvic PT is wonderful, especially if there's a physical, structural, or tight muscle component. So sometimes, like you mentioned, after birth or even from whatever, any of the experiences that we've talked about, the muscles can get really tight in the pelvic floor, and that can cause pain. It's just like when you have any other tight muscle in your body, the body experiences that tightness as pain. And learning how to release that and how to do exercises and other things to support that can be super helpful. I mean, I know of women who have painful sex after birth and go to just a couple PT therapies and they're completely back to normal. The same can go for, there's a condition called vaginismus, which is a unnatural super tightening of the muscles of the vaginal introitus or opening and all of those pelvic floor areas. And vaginismus can happen for lots of different reasons, but at the root of it, you know, there's tight muscles. Well, there's roots to it, but the issue is tight muscles. And so learning how to support that. There's other kinds of therapists that are sort of like the holistic pelvic PTs, which are called sexological body workers or somatic body workers, because now we're getting into another layer. So we've talked about like the obvious anatomical blockages, hormones, maybe physical structure, but now we're getting into, okay, what's going on with your body and how does your brain and body connect? Where is that disconnect and how do we connect those back together? So a somatic body worker is usually doing a blend of physical stuff with mental, emotional stuff. So it's not like just going to a PT, but it's not just going to a therapist. It's sort of somewhere in between. And that can be super helpful, especially when there's past programming, associations, trauma, all of that. And then the third layer is actually working with someone on the mental, emotional stuff. And that again can be for trauma, for past programming experiences, but even if you just had pain from something else like birth or endometriosis or something, and you've started to create those negative pathways, that will create its own version of trauma, you know, in your body. And then we hold that trauma in our tissues. So we need to release it from our tissues. We need to do the actual body work. But then we also need to release the trauma from our brain, our minds, our mental body. So there's a couple different types of practitioners that I like for that. You know, psychotherapy and traditional therapists are great, but a lot of times these things are much deeper than like conscious thought. They're subconscious and they go very deep. And for some people, it's generational trauma. So whether you believe in that or not, for some people, it could be that you've never had a sexual trauma. You've never had anything, but maybe your mother did. Maybe before she got pregnant with you or while she was pregnant with you or anytime. And it's sort of like passed down from that perspective.
There's a,
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a really good book called It Didn't Start With You. And then similarly, a book called The Body Keeps the Score. And both of these are different angles of this idea, though, that first of all, that like, yeah, we can hold trauma and heavy emotions that are blocking our physical experience in our tissues. And, you know, especially in the hips, like in the yoga, if anybody's ever done yoga, you always would hear the teachers, I feel like, talk about how, you know, when you're in pigeon pose and you're in these deep hip flexor opening exercises, you might have some feelings come up. And maybe we are storing our emotions in the psoas muscle, which is also involved in sex and orgasm for some people deeply, or whatever it is, that we'll literally store our emotional experiences in like a little physical sort of bundle that when it gets worked on can release and be gone. Also, though, you will experience that release and it can come up with a lot of tears and worry and anxiety and shaking. And there's all this like visceral somatic release stuff where, yeah, like the nervous system is getting it out and moving it through and processing it out. And then it's actually gone. And you're not just shoving it or ignoring it or dissociating or being avoidant or whatever it is. There's, you know, but then, yeah, the generational stuff as well. That's more of the angle of the book, which is called It Didn't Start With You, which is kind of like a very, it's, that book was like, it really got me thinking. It was very interesting, but there's a lot of science that backs up what he's saying. It almost feels like magical and like it, you don't believe it. So that one's a good one to look into if you do feel like you've, you know, oh, all the women in my family have had sexual trauma. Like my sister was raped. My mom was molested by her dad. My da 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 da. These things matter. They matter. We hear them. And even if you don't hear them, even if you don't know, there are people who've been adopted and then and had experiences in their life that they just can't explain. And then they go and they find their history of their birth parents or whatever. And it all comes to kind of like make sense because we hold these truths in our epigenetic codes, you know, and This is a lot of, can feel very woo woo. It's just not. So we need to get over that.
just shove it. It's not.
just stop that thought. but yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to highlight those two books. We'll put them in the show notes as well.
Yeah, I wrote them down at the end. Perfect. Yeah. So It's not always your trauma. And like I said, people in the trauma world will talk about little T trauma and big T trauma. And trauma, I think trauma sounds so bad. It sounds like I've been in a car accident and I'm bleeding out, or, you know, I've been raped in the woods by a stranger with a gun. Like that's very not common trauma. That can happen for sure. You know, sexual abuse by a family member when you're a kid, like that's a big T trauma. But trauma can happen even in a loving relationship. You know, like I said, with pain with sex, it could be with your husband who you love, who you've had amazing experiences with, but then there's like one day that you're distracted and not aroused and it has pain. You know, that could be a trauma that your body now stores in your tissue and you've created these neural pathways. And so there's, you know, processing that needs to happen there. So I don't want people to hear the word trauma and think like, oh, that's not me. You know, I didn't have any sexual abuse. I wasn't raped. I didn't have, you know, this horrible thing, because we all carry stuff in our bodies and in our minds and our brains. So I am of the belief that everyone would benefit from working on this kind of stuff. Even if you don't have painful sex, you know, there's probably something where it's affecting. So some ideas of the types of practitioners and things that can support this. EMDR is one. This is extra training that like a psychologist or therapist could do. MER stands for mental emotional release. And I'll put all of these in the show notes. Emotion code is another wonderful therapy. Psych K is awesome. The safe and sound protocol, matrix re-imprinting, emotional freedom technique, inherited family trauma therapy. These are all different types of trainings that practitioners or therapists can do that are specific for releasing these kind of subconscious traumas, even hypnotherapy. If you see a hypnotherapist, this can help, especially if you're not aware. Sometimes traumas can happen and your body does such a good job of protecting you from it that you don't even know it happened.
Yeah.
And that is crazy. You know, like you could have all of these experiences. Maybe you have all of these weird, especially with sex, because sex is just so, integrated in so many things. And someone could be like, well, has anything ever happened to you? You know, you could go to a therapist and be like, no, like, I don't know. But there is something there, but you have buried it so deep into your subconscious that you can't even access it consciously anymore. And that's where something like hypnosis or any of these subconscious therapies can get at. And if you're of the belief in past lives, you know, not everybody is, but sometimes there can even be past life stuff for people that you wouldn't know unless you're working with a therapist that can like access that. So there's all sorts of things to consider, but that is huge. And I know for me personally in my journey, it took me so long to understand all of this. And I wish that I had just known off the bat about pelvic PT that is done with internal work, not just dilators. So sometimes people who are experiencing vaginismus with that tightness, they'll go to a PT and they just kind of pry them open with dilators that get bigger and bigger. For me personally, I don't think that's the right approach because you're still not working with the body. You're prying something open that's trying to guard and protect you and keep it locked down. Instead, we need to do these somatic releases, this release work like you're talking about, the trauma work, and then the body will naturally start to dissolve and relax that tension because it's no longer guarding, you know, that opening to your reproductive space to just pry it open. I did that for years, you know. Yes, all of the therapy that I did, it didn't work. It didn't work because you're not getting to the root cause and the body's still like, wait, I'm going to like shut down. Some other things to do to support if you're experiencing pain and low libido is to foster your own sexuality outside of your experience with others. So I just know from my experience having pain for a long, long time because I had past programming, trauma, and hormonal stuff from birth control. That was the other thing I didn't even bring up was birth control. Birth control in itself can be the thing that can disrupt the hormones and the microbiome to a point that it can cause painful sex. And it can affect libido and arousal and all of that. So that's something that we need to remember too. For me, I had all of those things. That mine was multifactorial. And then when I started dating my husband, it was painful. But I tried lots of things. I had a lot of shame. I didn't know. And so my neural pathway was reinforced over and over again of painful sex, painful sex, painful sex. The cake punches you in the gut. You get punched in the gut every time you eat cake. And it's like for years, right? And it took me 3 years after my initial sexual trauma before I met my husband, before I even went to a therapist, because that's how like messed up it was for me. And it took me many, many more years to find pelvic PT, to find somatic body workers, to find trauma therapy. But for me personally, with all of my experience, I would say those alternative trauma type therapies paired with the somatic type of release work and pelvic PT, those three things were like, I wish someone would just start there. Don't waste your time on everything else. As long as, you know, you rule out all the other stuff. It's just, I wish I would have known. I didn't know. No one told me. I had to find it all on my own, doing all sorts of crazy paths. But some other things outside of that are fostering your own sexuality. Because when you have pain, it often is the intercourse part. Not always. Like some people will have inappropriate pain responses to just touch. But the intercourse part is often what causes pain with sex. And so if your only experience of sexuality leads to intercourse or ends in intercourse, which ultimately is painful, you're going to start shutting down that part of yourself. You're going to start shutting down your sexuality. You're going to start shutting down anything. You're not going to have a libido because, you know, let's say your husband looks at you with like this like twinkle in his eye. Your body says danger, 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 shut down, right? Mm-hmm. Like that, it's not going to work. So you need to have your own experience of sexuality that is separate from your partner and that is separate from intercourse. So that's step number one, which again, I need to get my resource out. Maybe I'll make that a part of the end of my pregnancy priority because I have all of these different ways to do that. But just being with yourself, it doesn't even have to be, you know, sexually arousing or stimulating yourself, but just stepping into an energy of sexual energy, whether it's dancing or, you know, dressing a certain way and just feeling more sexual and having those positive reinforcements in your brain. And then we want to start oh, go ahead.
Really quick, I just want to say something for me, because I am so in my head often and just generally disconnected from my body. I feel like, because I've always said this my whole life, I feel, whatever the homeopathic remedy would be for this, if anyone knows, please hit me up. I feel like my brain and my body are two different things. And I've always felt this. I just feel like, obviously, we know we are a spirit inside of a body, but I can't tell you exactly how extremely I feel that, where I'm like, or I don't even realize I have a body. Like, I can feel that I'm maybe low level hungry, or I'm low level have to pee or something. And I'm just thinking so loud. I can be thinking so loud, my eyes are open, and I have no idea what's actually happening in the room. Like, my eyes are open, my brain is taking in this information, but like, my thoughts have like pictures and images, and it's like, maybe that's why I'm loving reading these books too, because the image that's being created in my brain is almost like I'm watching a movie. It's like, yeah, it's like the same thing to me as watching a show or something.
Same. Yep.
Yeah. I love it. It's great. But I can also kind of ignore my body signals, and just something as simple as, I've noticed this time and time again, doing like a 10-minute, I'm not kidding, 10-minute little mini yoga routine right before bed will increase my libido and just response and interest so much. Whereas like, my husband is really in his body. He's like very, yeah, very grounded in his body. I feel like that's kind of a common experience for men in general, to just be like very stereotypical, but I think it is. It's like, they just, I don't know, maybe. And when women are sort of type A and high functioning and rah, 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 and also maybe just a little bit like spread thin and managing the kids in the house and their work and blah, 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 it's really easy to get pulled out of that. I don't have like a super strong workout connection either. And so, you know, I go on walks, but I'm not somebody that's like in my body in that kind of a sense. I feel like women who are tend to be the ones that are then more receptive in the sexual realm, because they are like connected in that way. Yep. So if you might be somebody like me, I guess I'm just saying that those, for those, if this resonates with you and you're like, oh wow, yeah, I kind of ignore my body's impulses, or I kind of ignore the way that it feels, like sometimes I'll have pain and I just completely shut it out. Mm-hmm. Because I'm just thinking so loud. And so I'm like kind of just chugging along, and it's like my body's this a bit of like a behind idea to me. It's like sort of an afterthought. It's like, after all of the things in my brain have been satisfied, then I will satisfy my body. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a functional pattern. I don't suggest doing what I'm doing, but it is the way that it is for me. And I have to like literally do small things, like act on the first sensation that I need to pee. I will like consciously be like, okay, go and honor your body's need to pee. Like, you can stop doing the dishes. You can stop writing that thing out. You can do and go and do it. And I think sometimes that little step can foster this idea of being more sexualized and in our body, and just, yes, feeling it and being like the idea of just pleasure that's not even sexual, like stuff that just feels good. Like getting one of those like foot massager machine things feels so good. And, you know, feet are very grounding too. And so like, if we like foot massages or you want something like that, that can be a really good place to start. If you're like, I have no idea how to start with this, just sit on the ground and like massage your own feet, or maybe roll them out on a ball. Sometimes we carry a lot of tension in our feet too, but that can literally be like the most physical grounding, mm-hmm, part of your body to sort of begin with, and see how that has an after effect on your whole life, really.
Yeah, I love that. And that is, it's like getting into our body, and that's a big pillar of low libido, which we won't talk about fully in this episode, but it is that monkey mind in your head, not in your body component. For some people, that is enough to cause low libido. And that's like most moms and most, yeah, women in general. And it's just, we have to be sort of already aroused in a way to have a libido, which is like another part. Go back to episode 15 if you want to learn more about that. And when we're always in our head, we are never aroused in our body to then have the desire to want to have sex. So it's so complicated. And I love that you brought that up, because that is a big way of having sexuality with yourself. So part of it is dropping into your body. The other is getting your mindset around sexuality, right? That like, just, I use this analogy when I talk about my fertility patients, of acting as if you're already pregnant. Acting like every step when you get out of bed and you pivot and you step onto the floor, the step is the step of a pregnant person. You go to the kitchen and you eat assuming that you're eating for two. Like you're already in that energetic frequency that every decision you make, every energetic, like the energetic bubble around you is that of someone who is pregnant. And there's a lot of science around manifestation and energetic frequencies, but like when you live at the frequency that you want to be at, even if it's not true in the current reality of the density of the world, there is a frequency where it is true. And one of my biggest coaches that I learned from, her name is Mary Morrissey, and she would always say, you have to come from your dream, you don't get to it. So you have to live as if. So if you want the job, you know, you live as if you're already working at that job. If you want to be the CEO, you live as if you're already the CEO. If you want to be the best mom, like even if it's not true in this current reality, you live as if. And I teach that in my fertility energy course for fertility, but for libido, the same applies. You might not feel like you have a high sex drive. You might not feel sexy. You might feel really all of the opposites, but step into a reality or a frequency that you are sexual, that you have a libido. And I love using the shower as that kind of place where I shift, especially if, you know, my husband and I are going to be intimate at night. It's like a good way to kind of wash off the rest of the day and then step into this like frequency of, you know, here I am as this like sexual being, this sexual person, and the water kind of helps be like a reminder of washing away that old frequency and stepping into this new frequency. So if that's helpful for anybody, but it doesn't have to be a shower. It could be a yoga. It sounds like for you, it's kind of yoga.
Yeah. I mean, literally just because it's like stretching my body and making me think about it for a minute and like, and connecting breath with body and not being in my head. Meditation, I think I suppose could do the same thing where you're sort of like, well, no, because I do think there needs to be some physical actual moving of the body and like and feeling and like, you know, it is a physical thing and it is a beautiful way that we get to use our bodies. It's an awesome experience. It can be, I guess, you know, an awesome experience. And, I think like our point here, one of our main points is just that you don't have to live in this state of sex not being something that is fulfilling, that is pleasurable, that is connecting with your partner. And, you know, it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you, that like you're just broken. And there are so many, obviously, I mean, this can kind of feel overwhelming. We've given you so many different avenues to look through, but that's because it's complex, it's complicated. Mm-hmm. And your OBGYN is going to know maybe one of these like 25 things we've just listed out. So if they tell you, oh, everything's fine, you're good, you're fine, don't just take that at face value and then move forward in your life thinking, well, it's not fine. And so obviously, if the doctor said I'm fine and I'm not experiencing good sex, then like it's me and I am just bad and I am evil. And then, you know, letting that idea feed into whatever you were told as a little girl, that your vagina is dirty and bad and don't touch it and sex is bad and you're going to die and you're going to whatever, all the things. Like it's so, human minds are so interesting and around this topic. And then as it relates to motherhood too, I mean, I think I don't know anyone really, let me think, hold on for a second. I mean, even the most sexual couples that I'd ever known, once you come into parenthood, things shift and change. Mm-hmm. And it is like, I think it's a bit of a struggle for all of us to prioritize. It's also, we just need to remember, I think we need to kind of relax and go, okay, this is not like necessarily my most sexual era. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be, but family building time for many is not. And that's okay too. And it's like, it doesn't mean that you don't love them. It doesn't mean that you don't connect and whatever. But if you're just not alone in that feeling, and we can do steps to reprioritize it if it's important to you and important to your partner, which usually it is on some level, although some people are more physical than others. This is like where love languages come into play too, because like if your partner knows how to, I know that we talk about this in the other episode, but just to say it really fast, if your partner knows how to get at you in a way that is meaningful to you, like if your partner loves to give you gifts and you just don't really care about gifts, it's just not going to make you feel loved. It's not necessarily going to keep cultivating that connection and that like really deep sense of safety that women usually need to feel from their partners in order to open up and receive in that feminine energetic state of literally allowing someone to enter their body. Like it's a big deal. We need to feel safe and loved and connected with and stuff. And so if it's spending deep quality time with them where you feel emotionally connected first so that you can then feel physically connected, or if it's them doing the acts of service thing or whatever, you know, making you feel like they're taking care of the space around you. And then that makes you feel safe and receptive and open and whatever it is. Like there's so many layers to this and you just don't have to live in a state of constant chronic pain.
Yeah. Yeah. And I call those pillars of passion. And the thing I'll end on, the last thing I wanted to share is outside of you fostering your own sexuality is creating containers with your partner to foster sexuality and intimacy that don't lead to intercourse, because that is building, rewiring that neural pathway that it would be like baking the cake together. You know,
I love that.
Let's bake the cake every night. And then your body doesn't have the pain part and it starts to build networks of pleasure with your partner, with intimacy, where you start to learn that and your body starts to feel safe, because if it always ends in intercourse, where it's painful while you're working on all this other stuff that we've shared with you, if you're always going to end in intercourse that has pain, then you're never going to get ahead of these neural pathways that are being built. So setting containers, I love setting a timer of like, okay, we're going to be together for 20 minutes. We're going to have foreplay. We're going to touch. We're going to talk. We're going to like do whatever intimacy practices feels good and start to explore stuff. And if ever it's painful, you don't do that thing. You stop and it doesn't end in intercourse. For a lot of women, this gives them the freedom to like take a deep breath and be like, okay, I'm not here to like perform for my partner. It's not about them. Because when you're having painful sex and you keep having sex with your partner, it ultimately becomes about them. Because you're not obviously enjoying that because it's painful, but they're getting their need met. And then there can be resentment that's built. And it's just, it can create like a whole complicated thing. So connecting with your partner where you are getting your needs met, you know, without the pain. And that's a big part of this practice too, while you work on these other things, because obviously just like having abstinence forever, like especially if you're in like a partnership with your husband isn't the answer. And I've been told that. I've been told everything. Literally anything that you could have possibly imagined, I have been to somebody who has told me to do it. I mean, like just don't have sex for a year. Go sleep with other people. Like do every. I mean, I've been told everything. And I'm sharing with you the things that I think have worked not only with myself, but with my patients. So keep an eye out for hopefully I can get myself together to get this resource out for you guys. Finally, after like 2 years of me saying it last time, I don't even know what happened to that, but there's a lot to unpack. So hopefully this episode's been helpful for you guys.
Yeah. Thank you for listening this all out. And I just want to echo what you said in the very beginning, which was that, you know, the hero's journey, like it's not been an easy road. And similar, like you said, with me with postpartum and mastitis, it's like there are holes in the medical community and then the gap of helping people. And I mean, of course there is, right? Like we're not really that old of a civilization where we're able to like gather all of these informational resources to the modern human way. And so much of it is, has been lost in translation throughout history, but then also we are now living in a totally new way as modern humans that has its own complex, complicating factors that we haven't really had to deal with throughout history and in ancient cultures that we do now. And so we have to come up with these like newer modern solutions, and it's more, and it's more work, and it's harder, and all sorts of different things. But so thank you for just doing what you've done. And the show notes on this episode are going to be packed, so definitely check that out. There will be like the list of the different types of practitioners and therapies mentioned, as well as the podcast episodes mentioned, and a lot more for you to be able to just kind of use this as a guide as you're navigating this path for yourself. And yes, we hope that one day your sex can only be really yummy and awesome, beautiful chocolate cake.
Yes. And I can just tell you from experience that when you do these things, it does get better. There is hope. There was a time I didn't think that that was possible. And now I can confidently say that it is. So
yay.
Just, yeah, want to throw that out there. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Before you go, there's one last thing. Did you know that we have a swag store now? The Healthy as a Mother store, where we sell amazing merchandise that is fun to wear. We have shirts and hats and sweatshirts. We have drinkware, bags, journals, all of the things that are healthy as a mother or related to motherhood in general. We would love if you could support our podcast by checking out our store. We love doing what we do, and it's really helpful to get the support and also to spread the word and share our amazing brand with the world. And you get some really cool, awesome stuff. One of my favorites is the crop sweatshirt and one of our glasses that we sell that says healthy as a mother. I just think it's so great. So head to www.healthyasamother.com/store to check out what we have. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store. And we are absolutely open to feedback. If there's something you would like to see that is not at the store, we can make a lot of different things there. So head over there, check it out, and we would love to see you sporting some Healthy as a Mother gear. And if you take a picture of yourself on Instagram, definitely tag Dr. Morgan and I, and we will be sure to share. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store to check out our merchandise.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.